Being is taken from the book of John in the New Testament. John chapter 5, verses 1 to 18. It's on page 96 of your Pew Bible if you'd like to follow along, page 96 of the New Testament portion. John chapter 5, verses 1 to 18, a story about Jesus healing on the Sabbath. After this, there was a festival of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now in Jerusalem, by the Sheep Gate, there is a pool, called in Hebrew Bethesda, which has five porticos. In these lay many invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" The sickly man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am making my way, someone else steps down ahead of me." Jesus said to him, "Stand up, take your mat, and walk." At once the man was made well, and he took up his mat and began to walk. Now that day was a Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been cured, "It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your mat." But he answered them, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Take up your mat and walk.'" They asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take it up and walk'?" Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had disappeared in the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you have been made well. Do not sin anymore so that nothing worse happens to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. Therefore, the Jews started persecuting Jesus because he was doing such things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father is still working, and I also am working." For this reason, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because he was not only breaking the Sabbath, but he was also calling God his own Father, thereby making himself equal with God. This is the word of the Lord.
Glory, our supreme concern. Wow. Picked the right time to turn on the mic. God's glory, God's hope, God's strength, and yet it is possible to resist Jesus Christ. And the passage before us today, we have a case of passive resistance and then active resistance. But first, let me tell you about a man by the name of Jake Worm. That was probably part of his problem, his last name. He was 55 years old. It was 1955, and his wife had divorced him. He had just declared bankruptcy. He was hopeless and helpless. He was walking along the Pacific Ocean in California, wondering if he should just end it all, just jump in the water and not come out. When he stumbled across a bottle, and inside the bottle, there was a piece of paper. So he opened the cork and pulled out the message in the bottle. And these aren't the exact words, but something like, "Whoever receives this note will receive half of my fortune. The other half goes to my attorney. Signed, Daisy Alexander, 20 June, 1937. Now, this is in 1955. Well, he was intrigued by the bottle and decided not to commit suicide, but he decided not to pursue finding out who Daisy Alexander was. He thought that was an interesting message. He put it on his shelf. But a few weeks later, he talked to one of his friends and said, "Hey, have you ever heard of Daisy Alexander?" Now, this is before all the tabloids and internet, but his friend did know a Daisy Alexander. He said, "I think she was the heir to the Singer Sewing Machine Company." So they did a little research, and she had died in 1939, and indeed, she had a will that had disappeared. And this guy had to hire someone who was able to prove that the bottle was dropped in the Thames and somehow ended all the way in California. But in 1956, Jake Worm received a settlement of $15 million U.S. dollars. Couldn't you use a bottle like that right now? You know, Jake didn't do anything to deserve it, but suddenly there was a fortune right there for him once he knew who the owner of that fortune was. Well, let's go to John chapter 5. Jesus is in Jerusalem for a feast. We're not told which feast. And he's walking by a particular pool. And if you've been to Jerusalem, you've probably been to this pool. It's next to St. Anne's Church, and I talked to our resident archaeologist at the 9:30 service, and she said, yes, this is probably the pool. There's a pool that was excavated in the 1880s. It has the exact number of porticos. It probably was this very pool. And people would come to this pool, and the tradition was the angel of the Lord would touch the pool, and there would be a ripple, and the first person into the pool would be healed. And we're told there was a man who had been ill for 38 years. We don't know how long he'd been waiting in the pool area, but for a very long time, we're told, he was paralyzed, placed next to the pool, and his job was to be the first one in. You know, I was taking the MTR the other day, and I have sympathy for this guy. People just were pushing, and I got locked out of a car because of the press. Imagine this paralyzed person. And so Jesus picks him out of this large crowd of invalids, and he asks a very disturbing question. Do you really want to get healed? Well, I sort of like this paralyzed guy because he reminds me a lot of myself. He doesn't want to take responsibility. He doesn't answer Jesus' question. He doesn't say, yes, I've been ill for 38 years. I really want to be healed. What does he do? He comes up with some excuses. Well, every time the water is stirred, someone jumps in before me. I'm paralyzed. I'm helpless. I'm hopeless. Kind of a Eeyore sort of personality. He missed the main question because of his excuses. Anybody here make excuses? I just heard this week somebody in one of the Hong Kong schools sent a note, please excuse my daughter, she has the swine flu, I had her shot. Or a father was maybe not a very nice father, the mother wrote a note saying, please excuse John for being, it's his father's fault. Okay. But when the king of the universe came to this particular paralyzed man and said, do you want to be healed? Do you really want to be healed? All he could do was make excuses. There's just no way I can be healed. And then Jesus says, stand up, take up your bed, and walk. Now, this guy was so compliant, he probably didn't even think. He just stood up and he walked. A miracle had happened. He had been ill for 38 years and now he was healed. Only one problem. He forgot to get the name of the guy who healed him. If you'd been healed, would you at least stop to ask Jesus who he was? Before we make too much fun of him, what if Jesus were to ask you that question? Do you really want to be healed? Do you really want to get better? C.S. Lewis says, sometimes a familiar captivity is more comfortable than unfamiliar freedom. A familiar captivity is more comfortable than an unfamiliar freedom. This man was good at playing the victim. His identity was being a person who couldn't walk, and he probably made the most of it. few weeks ago, I took a plane from Asia, and then I was taking a smaller commuter plane to Chicago. And the plane from Asia was late, so I was rushing with my luggage to the commuter plane. I got on the plane, I'm going down the aisle, and I noticed in front of me a very attractive woman. And I just thought, oh, she's a very attractive woman. And then I took my luggage and tried to put it in the overhead compartment, and as I did, I smashed her in the back. Now, she was a very attractive woman, but she had a very unattractive vocabulary. And she let me have it. She screamed, "I was stopped! Why did you ram your suitcase into my back?" And I'm going, I'm sorry, I'm guilty, I'm not, you know, I'm not excusing my behavior, I was wrong. But the thing that ticked me off, she kept going down the aisle, oh, and people, oh, are you okay? And then I put my head over the seat and I see her pointing at me, talking to some of her seatmates, and they were looking at me like, "You scum." Public enemy number one. She was enjoying her victimhood. I really think so. And sometimes it feels good not to be good, to have other people feel sorry for us, the pity that we engender. And so I don't know what's holding you captive, but when Jesus says, "Do you really want to be healed?" Are we like the passive resistor and just sort of not answer that question? Well, he's healed. He picks up his bed and he walks. And this is where the active resistance kicks in. You see, you can't work on the Sabbath. Now, before we're really hard on the Pharisees, we have to at least give them credit for trying. And I don't know how many of you honor a Sabbath. You know, there's a rhythm of life. How many of you take a day where you can be refreshed and relaxed? And see, the Sabbath was made for humanity, not humanity for the Sabbath. It was a really good commandment. It was for us. But the Pharisees were concerned that it might not be interpreted correctly, so they had 39 different categories of what constitutes working on the Sabbath. And some of them were pretty wild. In carrying your mat qualified. In fact, if you carried your mat on the Sabbath, the penalty was death by stoning. So here is this guy, just healed, breaking the law. Now, I don't want to be hard on religious leaders, but sometimes we deserve some of the contempt that's poured upon us, because in this case, the Pharisees, they knew this guy. He'd been there for a very long time. They knew he was paralyzed, and suddenly he can walk. What should the religious leaders, "Oh, God has worked a wonderful work. We've been praying for you. God bless you." No. They came with accusations. "You're breaking the law." We had a wedding here recently with two ring bearers. And ring bearers are the things that really scare me about weddings. And they were two precocious little boys, but they behaved beautifully. They delivered the rings and they sat, well, actually they were embraced by their parents very tightly for most of the wedding service. But then it was time for the bride and groom. They pronounced husband and wife and they start prancing down. And just as the bride gets about here, the ring bearers get loose. And she's got this beautiful long train. So they stomp on it. And it's a good thing the groom is holding his bride, because the bride went, "Ah!" and almost tipped over. And that's the kind of image I have. Is here's this guy, he's walking for the first time in 38 years. He's really excited. And the first thing is those Pharisees try to tip him over. They say, "You are breaking the law." Well, this guy who Jesus chose to heal out of a large crowd of needy people was not all that deserving a person. Because what does he do? He said, "It's not my fault. It's the guy who healed me. It's his fault. So the Pharisee said, now, who is this guy that healed you? Didn't get his name. The paralyzed man who can now walk goes back into the temple, probably to pray, so he gets some credit for that. And Jesus finds him. And Jesus says, you know, you've been healed physically, but you need to stop sinning because there's something worse than physical illness. And the guy goes, and your name is Jesus. And instead of saying, oh, I'm going to stop sinning because there's something worse than physical illness, he immediately goes to the Pharisees and says, hey, I know the guy. But what got the Pharisees upset? I mean, we look now 2,000 years later and say, boy, those laws were a little strange. But there's not a corner in Jerusalem in 2000 on strange laws. My favorite Hong Kong law, I hate to tell this to the guys. I better read this so I get it correct. A betrayed wife is legally allowed to kill her adulterous husband. It's the statute, but the fine print. But may only do so with her bare hands. Now, help me with this one. Under the UK's tax avoidance schemes regulation 2006, it is illegal not to tell the taxman anything you don't want him to know, though you don't have to tell him anything you don't mind him knowing. I mean, it's right in the... It's illegal to die in the Houses of Parliament. It's an act of treason to place postage stamps of the Queen upside down on an envelope. It's legal to murder a Scotsman within the ancient city of York, but only if he is carrying a bow and arrow. And one more, Kansas City, Missouri, in the United States, children are prohibited by law from buying cap pistols. However, the law does not restrict them from buying shotguns. You know, we make rules and regulations so we can live together, right, as a society. And the Pharisees had all these rules and regulations. And then here comes this man, Jesus, who breaks the rules. Now, what he's going to tell them is, I'm not breaking the rules, I'm completing the rules. And there was a purpose for the Sabbath, and you have abused that purpose, and I'm trying to call us back to God. But see, the only person who was allowed to work on the Sabbath for the Pharisee was God. And so when Jesus worked on the Sabbath, that was bad. But then he went even further. He said, he's my Father, and I am God. And from that point, there was a change. There was persecution because the Pharisees, who didn't mind when Jesus cleared out the temples and took care of the Sadducees, when he started attacking their sacred routine, there was trouble. I don't know about you. Do you actively resist or do you passively resist Jesus when he comes into your life and says, do you really want to be healed? I've told this before, but it's an astonishing story. A Christian psychologist in a church that I once worked in, I said, what was your most amazing case? And he said, you know the person. It was a woman who was not dealt fairly by life. She had a very, very difficult life. Her husband had left her, her kids hated her, and she was the angriest person I had ever met. Good church worker, though. But she was just consumed by anger. And this psychologist said, Greg, I asked her a question. I don't know. It had to be the Lord because I would have never asked anybody this question. I said, Marilyn, if all your guilt were stripped away, if all your unforgiveness was stripped away, if all your anger was stripped away, would there be anything left of you? And her answer was, no. And God did a special work in Marilyn's life. If anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. The old has passed away, the new has come. She became a wounded healer. She became a person who, when I think of the joy of Christ in a person, I think of this particular person. But it took a very godly, brave psychologist to ask the question that Jesus asked, do you really want to be healed? What's keeping you from the sort of relationship with Christ and with other people that you really desire? Is the familiar captivity that you found yourself in more comfortable than the unfamiliar freedom that Jesus Christ promises? I wish the story today had a happy ending. The paralytic man is healed, and he misses Jesus, and we don't hear from him again. And the Pharisees, rather than saying, wow, this man must be from God, this man may be the Messiah, he may be God, instead they began an active conflict with drastic consequences. Do you really want to be well? Jesus asks us. And my prayer is that we come up with a better answer than the paralytic or the Pharisees. Let's stand for a final song.